Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is December 4th. That was easy because everybody's on online talking about Jay-Z's birthday and the anniversary of Fred Hampton's assassination. So this is a pretty kind.
And this is the anniversary of Kemp's death too, isn't it?
Yes, and Chad and Chad's death as well. So it's a lot of stuff happened on the 4th. So, you know, peace and love to Chad. Still miss him dearly.
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
I'm always bugged out by the amount of Jay-Z shout-outs on social media.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of weird. Like, I just got to be honest.
It's a lot.
It's kind of weird because, like, you niggas don't really shout your mans and them out like that.
The word.
On their birthday.
But everybody and their grandmother is running the post Jay-Z post.
Fam, it's kind of like, okay. I mean, is that your man's like that? I mean, I guess. I mean, God bless him. I don't want to be that guy, but like, it's a lot. It's a lot.
That's a lot. It is a lot. It's a lot. It's, you know, it's the same when Beyonce's birthday comes and people go ham. It's like, I mean, you know, she's Beyonce. I get it, but like, you know,
like, because niggas really be making these wild personal shouts, and it's almost like, hey, we're friends, and they're tagging him, and I'm just like, if that's really like your man like that, like you shoot him, like on your birthday, I'm not on Twitter posting or IG posting shout outs to Jeff.
Yeah, just like this.
I hit Jeff on his birthday.
Call me.
Yeah, I mean, and I get it. You know, Jeff isn't Jay-Z, but it's just kind of like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. You know, that's even why I've kind of slowed down with the posts. Like, you know, with when Chris Lighty's passed away, I don't really kind of do that publicly anymore. And even Pimp C, I didn't do anything publicly today.
Yeah. Well, I only knew because Bun posted.
Yeah, it's like I don't, you know, I mean, it's because I think it also becomes at a certain point, it also becomes a thing where people are kind of trying to almost prove that they knew that person or they were cool with that. And it's like, I don't, you know, really need to do that. You know, if you don't, that's fine. It's, it's no big deal. But anyway, how y'all doing? Thanksgiving was a week ago almost now, but how was everybody's Thanksgiving last week?
Mine was good.
Where did you go?
So we went to Mr. Eric's sister's house.
Oh, that's right.
In Jersey. And we were supposed to eat there at 5. We ate there at 7:30.
Well, you know, they do what they do.
So then we, which was fine. So yes. then we went by Lauren and Country Cousin.
Oh, because he was out there in Jersey.
Her family, they only live about 10 minutes away. So then we went over there.
Okay.
And Lauren's dad was also in town.
Mr. Joe!
Yeah,
Mr. Joe in the house.
It's a good weekend, Mr. Joe.
Eric and Mr. Joe. Shit.
So me and Mom went over there because Mom had not yet met the baby.
Okay.
So we went over there, and then we went to me and Mom and Eric and my uncle were in different cars. Eric and my uncle went on ahead to my sister's house for being a friend to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Mom caught a flat when we left Lauren's house.
Oh hell no!
In Jersey, it's cold as hell.
On Thanksgiving night.
The AAA came through.
Okay.
And then we got to Rabia's at like 1 something in the morning, which was crazy.
Crazy.
And ate again.
Well, you're there. You might as well. Yeah, you're there. Shit, you know?
And we were there till like 3:30.
As you should have been.
And then Greg's family had a fish fry on Friday. So then
as they should. It sounds like a very black Thanksgiving.
They roasted a pig on Saturday. I did not go to that.
Oh my God, that was black.
Was it the whole hog? Hold on now. You can't just skip over the whole hog.
A pig on a spit in a grate.
Oh my God.
Was it in the ground or was it above?
No, they didn't put it in the ground. They put it up.
Okay.
So they put
okay.
it in like two pieces of metal grate.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that and they squeeze it flat and then spin it. Yeah, yeah.
So okay. I went in the garage because all the liquor was in the garage. I carried my ass in the garage on Friday and almost stepped right on the goddamn pig. I
damn. Was when you, we get a pig at the I guess at the
you could, I don't you know. Could, I don't
nah,
know where
you
can
get it from. If you got legit butchers, you can get it from a legit butcher. Them, yeah. But also yeah. on the low, if you live in certain areas, people probably outside of New York don't know, but like Bravo Supermarket, which is like a
they be having them in the back.
Yes, yeah. Not in the back. You can order them. You could go I go to a Bravo to get all our ethnic shit. Right when you need some real legit seasonings and stuff, and when you go there during this holiday time, mm-hmm. right. they have the thing on there. It says order your pig or whatever. Even in the summer, like for the 4th, all of that shit,
oh.
so you can order the different sizes. Obviously, they have obviously different sizes. I'm sure that they max out at what size they have. But yes, you can go to a butcher and get that.
That's right. Crazy! Wow. Wow, that's a real black shit right there.
That was black.
Yeah,
that's
super black.
I was like,
country black, yeah. So my Thanksgiving was it ended up good. So I was supposed to have it here, as I mentioned on the show, and then the people I had bought my dining room set from, of course, didn't come through. Fucking bullshit. Still don't have it. I actually wonder if they get my money back today.
How do you know I have it?
These motherfuckers ain't. Cause you know what? Honestly, because I don't think they got it. Because I think that I bought it and they ain't got it. And they trying to figure out a way to figure something out because it'll take this long. You know what I'm saying?
It doesn't take this long.
Yeah. So I called my Aunt Penny literally Wednesday and was like, I ain't got no dining room table. And she was like, well, we could just come over, just do it over here, which actually worked out. And I'm going to keep this in mind for Christmas because we ended up eating around the same time. You ate 9, which is 7:30. Right. Well, maybe a little earlier, maybe 6:37. Which for us is dumb early. And I realized it because all the food, for the most part, was bought there.
Right.
See, it's slow when Penny got to cook. Yes. Then we go in until like 8, 9 o'clock.
No, because it takes a long time.
No, it does. And she starts late. Whatever. So, I love my Penny, so I don't want, but So I went over there actually Wednesday night and because I had picked up some food, Wednesday, like some fried whiting and some barbecue chicken. So I bought my shit over there Wednesday night. So by the time we got there Thursday, people were kind of bringing stuff and all we had to do was heat it up. So right. I'm just going to like remember that moving forward when we eat at Penny's. Everybody bring stuff.
I'm sure she would appreciate that too because it's less for her to do. Oh, yeah,
yeah. She made the greens. That's all she made was the greens. Everything else was important. But we had a good time. We had a nice crowd of folks. And it was just a nice evening. And actually, I took the train out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
which actually wasn't bad though. It took me like maybe an hour door to door, maybe.
But with food? How much food did you take?
No, remember I drove out there the night before with my food.
But with all of your food.
Yeah. Well, no, I did take some shit the next day. But it was I had it in a like one of them, bags.
Yeah, like the insulated.
Yes, bag. Exactly. Yes, I just took the A train down to 34th Street.
Nigga was on the train with the DoorDash bag.
Yeah, basically, absolutely. And then took the Long Island Railroad. It's only two stops from Penn Station to her.
Yeah,
it was quick. It was like, oh shit, this is nuts.
Yeah, it's not anyway. It's not that bad when you do that.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. How was yours, bro?
It was good, man. Again, man, lots of people. We ate, we were set to eat at 6, we were a little behind, I think we ate like 6:45. No, but like nigga, 6 was like, for real, I was like, yo, this is a real 6, cause I ain't eat all day, bro. Like,
yeah, I'm hungry.
This is for real. And if you ain't here, then you just ain't here. You get what's left. So, but everybody, made it through. It was great, good family and fun vibes, man. So, somebody blew through my 100 proof. God bless him.
Wow.
I don't know who it was, but it's all right though. My nephew, when I think about it, man, my nephew is a drinking age now. So.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like 22, 20, Like, and they're of age. So,
They're grown, they can drink.
They
definitely dipping. And then Saturday, I ended up going up to Toronto. for this little A&R thing. They paid me to go up there and do some A&R stuff. So I did a night in Toronto Saturday night. And, you know, people kind of notice already, but, you know, if you don't know, Toronto, even in the winter, it's a really dope city, man. It's a lot going on.
Yeah, it's an international city. It's an
international city.
Yeah, it's just a city.
Yeah. Like not say, it's a city. It ain't like no, like a little something. No. It's a city on some, you know, maybe not quite New York, but it's a lot.
I'd probably put that as a top five in the world.
Yeah.
It's a cleaner baby New York.
Yeah, it's a lot going on. They got the dope restaurants and clubs. Whatever you want to do is there. So, and it's an hour flight to get there from New York. The only problem I had was coming back on Sunday, which was the, you know, the big. No, it wasn't the snow. I missed the snow, God bless, but because I left super early. But it was just a big travel day. So I got to the airport at 6:30 a.m. Our flight was at 8. I got to the gate at 8 o'clock. It took me 90 minutes.
Wow.
To get from to security to the member. Then I got to go through customs.
They ain't have no clear. All
right.
No, they ain't got no clear up there, bro. They got global entry, which I don't have. I need to get up on that.
Definitely.
Yeah. Because I was like.
Get that bullshit. Like yesterday, bro.
Yeah. No, seriously. Because I was like, this is some bullshit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but anyway, so yeah, it was good. It was a good weekend. Let's jump on into the show. I got back Sunday and watched my I know y'all don't watch now, but I watched the second part of Love and Marriage Huntsville Reunion. It was special. I was good. That's all I'm gonna say about that.
All I want to know is that couple where dude was cheating and homegirl was pregnant. Are they still together?
They still together, and that was the thing on the show. They acting like everything is sweet. And she acting like. We didn't watch you all season going crazy because your man's mistress kept calling you. They on the show like, nah, we team Hope. It's all about, we like, wait a minute, Shorty, like, we watched the season. We saw what this nigga was taking you through. But, you know, they definitely still together. But they separated, they said on the show. They're not living together. I don't know what they're doing now. And then I watched, watched the Married to the Medicines. Wait, brother, you still watch it? You ain't really been keeping up.
No, I watch.
Okay. So the issue again, the main issue this week again was about Contessa, who's obviously a cast member on the show, and her husband are going through a lot because she was in college and to get a master's degree in public health and. She went to school, but she decided to school up, go to Meharry, which is up in Nashville. And they live in New Atlanta. So she was gone for 3 or 4 days out of a week every week. And it was obviously wearing a lot on wear and tear on the kids and him. And so she ended up dropping out of school and then she blames him for that. But what's the bigger picture, which I really kind of really figured out this week is, it's very interesting because she's literally going through a midlife crisis.
Yeah,
like what we used to men kind of doing and verbalizing is literally what she's verbalized. What's going on with her? She's in her 40s. She's accomplished a lot. She definitely, she's a doctor. She's was a high ranking officer in the service. Like she's done a lot. So it's not like she's been a bum or nothing like that at all. She's done a whole lot of things. But she's even on this show. She talked about how much she kind of missed those days of her being in the military, kind of with before she was married, no kids, no husband.
Like needing kind of a push or something?
No, she just was like, yo, like I had so much fun back then and he made me quit the army. But then when she described it, he didn't make her quit the army. They were in this relationship. It started getting heavy and it was long distance and it was back and forth. And he basically said to her like, yo, what are we doing here? Because like, I can't keep going back and forth. Like, are we going to move forward? I want to be with you and marry you, but if not, they kind of like, let me know. And she loved him and wanted to be with him. And so then they got married and she was still in the service at this point. And he's, kind of figuring out, I guess that maybe he's figuring out what he's trying to do, getting to be, he's a doctor as well. And then they had their second child. And then he was like, yo, like we got to chill because I don't want to be bouncing around the world with our children. Because if you're in the service tomorrow, it's like, you're going over here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so he like, yo, like, this is not a stable environment for our children. And so she quit the military. And so she talked, that's the first time she ever talked about that on the show. And she basically has all these regrets and like wishes she would have done things different, and she misses kind of being this free spirit kind of person, and she's taking it all out on him. Like basically yeah. saying, like, you're the person who stopped. It's your fault that I feel this way.
Yeah, she seems to me like a person who is coming to terms with the fact that she doesn't really like her life. And let me explain. Mm-hmm. Like, she, when she talked about being in the military, everything was about this adventure. Everything yep. was about, like, waking up in a new place and yep. all of the spontaneity that comes with being in the military and sort of mm-hmm. having this long distance relationship. And, you know, look, you know, when you start a family and when you are, you know, trying to put roots down in a place, I don't necessarily know that that's going to work. And
it's not going to work.
Really, that's not even just about, I was just going to say, sorry, that doesn't even sound like it's just about the military. That sounds like it's just about having kids.
Well, I think that that's a part of it. I do really think that she would be okay with picking up those kids and moving around. Like, if a job became open in, you know, Lisbon, you know, she'd pack those kids
she'd
up.
Be like, we out.
We out. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. Scott is kind of yeah. like, yo, I kind of really don't want to do that shit. And, you know, look, they're not spring chickens. You know what I'm saying? I get it. You know, she wants to have this sort of life, and she sees herself and probably envisioned herself having this sort of life. And what she realizes is that she woke up one day and she has a very monotonous life.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
someone who has a spontaneous spirit, she woke up in a monotonous marriage. Not a loveless man. I don't think that's what she's saying.
Yeah.
I just think that this has become boring to her.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why I don't think she wanted, like, her explaining that explained why she felt the need to go to Memphis.
Yes.
Right? It did, because we all said, you know, there's so many schools
like, yeah, in Atlanta
that you could have just gone to, right? And so the other thing I want to say is Scott is being a little passive aggressive, and I do want to kind of check him on that a little bit, because he's saying, I didn't tell you to quit, which is very true. He did not tell her to quit, but it's slightly disingenuous, right? Because you didn't make it easy for her to stay. Yeah,
you did not tell her to quit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. which is
say this is what we need to do, which is the same as telling her to quit.
Yeah, well, and I don't know that he's wrong, because it's not like Scott is working, you know, always, it's not like he's working 4 to 12.
Yeah, he's a doctor
as well.
Yeah.
So he's there. He's left with the with all of the responsibilities of the kids, which I'm saying he's looking at this as you didn't, you know, God forbid, you didn't die, right? You're not injured. You're not in a situation that was uncontrollable. This is a very controllable situation.
You just chose to do this
to do this.
Yeah.
And I think a part of that is, again, because she wants to have some level of freedom. She wants to have some solace. She wants to have some quiet time. She wants to have all of those things that she enjoyed pre-marriage. But like my nigga, like, you got another, you know, 15 years before your kids are really out of the crib. So I really don't know what to tell you, bro.
Yeah. No, it's very interesting, because you're used to seeing men kind of do this. Oh, he went and bought a Porsche, or he, you know, whatever. Like, and it's kind of, it's like Sean said, it's what she's doing. She's like, I'm going to go to school, but I'm going to go to school 500 miles away and just kind of see what that's about.
And then she was like, yo, he didn't bring the kids to see me once. And I'm like, yo, you wanted him to pack up
three kids.
For a 5-hour drive one way?
Yeah. And also,
for a weekend?
This is the other thing, Nye, because I know you don't really watch the show. Last season, she quit being a doctor because she said she wanted to spend more time with her kids.
And then she went to school 500.
And then she bounced. So Scott's like, yo,
that's definitely a crisis.
Yeah, Scott's like, yo, is it Uchi Wally or One Mike? Like, what you want? What are we doing here? You quit being a doctor, so you wanted to spend more time with the children, and then immediately, like, bounced to Nashville. So is this a very interesting kind of thing? I mean, and to this point, like, I suggest anybody in our age bracket do this. The song "Once in a Lifetime" by the Talking Heads, you know, Listen to that song now and what he's saying. And what he's saying is exactly what she's talking about. You know what I'm saying? You may find yourself living in a house. Yeah. This is not my beautiful wife. Like, it's literally like he's saying, like, yo, what the fuck did I do? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? This is not my beautiful wife. This is not, he's like, yo, what did I do? I'm stuck. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what that song's kind of about. So, and then just moving on to Real Housewives of Atlanta, not getting into all of the things that's going on, but the one thing I did want to discuss with that, which I saw people on the internet talking about, and we talked about amongst ourselves offline, was Candy's daughter, Riley, who's now 16. For some reason, I thought she had graduated high school, but whatever, 16 years old, is on the show. So I guess this was summer past, doing an internship with Candy's entertainment lawyer. I don't know who her lawyer is, but he's here in New York. And so Candy set up Riley, her daughter, with a really nice apartment. They said on the show it's like $5,500 a month. Look over on the east side, overlooking the East River, so she's got the views of like the 59th Street Bridge and the water and Long Island City and all that. And you know, it's Riley's 16, it's a doorman building, all that. Riley's 16, and somebody else is going to live with her who's a little older.
They kind of keep an eye on her
because she's 16, you know. Right. But I saw a lot of people online, you know, blacks online, being, I guess, upset or whatever term I'm looking for, that Candy did this. Like, why would you even do that? Like, and then there was a part in the show where Riley didn't know how ice is made in the refrigerator and didn't really understand she had to actually clean her shower because obviously there must be a maid or a nanny who does that around the house. So, and they were like, oh, she don't even know how to do that. And Candy's just showing off. I understand why she's trying to front and spend all this money. And I'm like, well, first of all, like, Candy's net worth is pretty nice. You know what I'm saying? Like, she got bread. This is not hurting her pocket one fucking bit, number one. Number two, this is what folks with bread do. Like, you know what I'm saying? You have access, God bless, to an entertainment lawyer who can, Riley, I guess, wants to maybe be a lawyer at this point in her life. So somebody who can kind of give them access and insight into what it really means and what it's really about. And, of course, the girl being 16 years old, you know, she's not going to, if she doesn't have to, not going to send her 16-year-old daughter to New York to live in a rat trap. You know what I'm saying? Like, in a walk-up in the Bronx. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and why would you?
Exactly. Like, and why would you?
You're going to send your child someplace that has a doorman, security,
mm-hmm.
in a decent area,
mm-hmm.
where she has access to wherever she needs to go. And honestly, she said that Riley is interning at a law firm. My guess would be wherever her building is in close proximity to wherever.
Yeah, probably not that far. Yeah. Just a few minutes away.
Yeah, she's probably walking to where
that looked like that might have been Murray Hill or something like that. Like,
yeah, it was definitely on the east side, that east sidey area. But what did y'all think about that? Like, kind of like some of the backlash.
I think the backlash is, you know, I think people in general have a very difficult time seeing black kids get spoiled.
They really do.
And there's a very, you know, look, I think that we are, you know, mentally, I think we put this block that even when black folks are in a position that they can afford that, that their kids somehow have to work harder for it.
And this, I ain't giving you shit.
I ain't giving you nothing. You got to make your own way. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, like, that's really not how any of this works, okay?
Right.
You get access to certain things and you take advantage of those things.
Of course.
For example, my nephew, I think maybe like his sophomore year or junior year in high school, he had gone to a boarding school, prep school.
Uh-huh.
And they had gotten, so he had gotten an internship at like Chase, like in the corporate section of Chase, but then he had to work down in the city. So he actually ended up rooming with friends from school who also got that internship, whose parents had an apartment downtown.
Right.
Like that
what's wrong with that?
This is not uncommon. If I have the ability to take care of my kid, like, why would I not give them that access? That's the money and the experience is whatever, right? Like, but I do think that there's also a little bit of backlash on the passive aggressiveness of it, right? Like, there is a little bit of, well, she's not really that spoiled, but she doesn't know she has to kind of clean her shower, right? Which is, which is, again, which is whatever, as I'm sure she has
but
never
those are
had
also
to do
two,
that.
I think those are also two separate issues. Like, there's being spoiled, and then there's being accustomed to a standard of living, which Black people feel like kids should not have access to. Right?
Yes, and I think that, I'm sorry, but I think that like, both of those things can be.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. I agree it's okay, because like you said, this happens with white kids all the time. And the other thing is, here's the reality of being in New York. Even if Candy had stuck Riley in an apartment, in a two-bedroom apartment in Harlem with a doorman in a building that was new construction, she still would have paid $3,000 a month.
I was getting ready to say, she would have been at between 35 and 3,700.
Easy.
So it's like, so A, you must not understand the real estate market. B, she's there for a summer. She's not there to do fucking Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie, you know, reality TV. She's there to work a job. They're not providing her with a fucking dorm. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's, I think that, like you said, Sean, we just can't get our minds out of a mindset of, like, where we would be if it was us, right?
It's so rare.
I wouldn't have got all that. But you're not in Candy's tax bracket.
Exactly. It's so rare for us to see that we have an visceral reaction to it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's like this almost cringeworthy reaction to seeing that. And even when you and I, Jeff, when we talked about her getting the car, we never talked about we were talking about the performance of the car.
I was talking about that's a lot of car. It's a powerful car for a new driver.
Yes.
Whoever it is.
You understand what I'm saying? So it's like, but nobody says these things about.
Or nobody says this on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Nobody says this about Puffy.
They'll say it when the kids come of age.
That's what I was getting ready to say.
Christian, because they're boys.
That's what I was getting ready to say.
They're gonna be like, oh, they don't need blah.
That's what I was. Yes, I think for a lot of this is that there's this assumption that, you know, she's being handed things, and because I was waiting for the think piece of, who didn't get that internship because, you know what I mean? Like, we all know that that's always the vibe. It's always the vibe, always the energy. So listen, you have access, you take advantage of your access. Like I've told my kids, you have resources, use them.
Yeah.
You know why? Because every other fucking kid out here that you went to school with, that you were in competition with,
they're using their
resources.
Yeah. And also, like, what's interesting is like, and I don't think it's hate, but it shows kind of, how can I put this? It shows where Candy is as far as having had money for quite a while now, is very comfortable with it. And Todd basically kind of getting money via Candy, so it's still fairly new. Because Todd was like, wow, Riley, damn, you chilling, and you got the car, now you got the crib. Like, he's still like, damn, she's doing a lot for you. You know what I'm saying? Whereas Candy, I don't even thinks of it like that. She's just thinking, I'm going to make sure my daughter, I hooked this internship up. I'm going to make sure my daughter is very safe and comfortable. And that's it. you know what I'm saying?
Like, also, Candy definitely hired a broker. Where do y'all think, you know what I mean? It's not like Candy was in New York on the streets. Like,
yeah, walking around, checking buildings.
On Craigslist, motherfucking apartment. Like, a broker bought her 5 options in this price range. The other thing is, it bothers me, though, also, because why do any of us work hard if not to afford
to enjoy the shit?
Different opportunity. And Riley ain't even, not that there's anything wrong with this, but Riley ain't even doing, like, oh, she's going to intern at a fashion label. Oh, she's going to intern at a law firm.
A law firm, which is she has some seriousness to her. You know what I'm saying?
That's commendable. Obviously, you want to support that.
Yeah, and I mean, listen, the reality is... And the reality is that you're never going to live... Listen, when you have a certain standard of living,
Right.
Okay. You will not go below that. Right. And if that means whatever, that means whatever. Like, yeah, you my man, right? But when we travel, not fucking staying at the La Quinta. I don't know what to tell you, my man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, right. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. You gonna find me? You gonna find me?
Thin,
Yeah, nigga. Right. No dice. You know what I'm saying? If I could pull up to the door, nah, my nigga.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
I'm good on that. Yeah. So yes, there's a certain level. And I've learned this, man. Like, not everyone has that ability to do those things. And I think that we also see that when we hear people talk about money all the time, you know, the people say, oh, if I hit the lotto, I'm going to put half of it away. Like, nigga, you don't even put half your income tax away.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying? It's just talk. It's just out in the open because they don't have the access to it. And so it's always difficult for people. And I don't mean this in any disparaging way. It's a very difficult thing for a person to take a $35,000 a year mentality
and apply it to like
and
$35 million
to a $3 million a year mentality.
Yeah, yeah,
it's just
yeah.
not, they, the numbers are so vast that they can't really grasp it.
Yeah. I agree with you, Sean, because I kind of was thinking that too. Like, it's almost like when people, again, not, I don't even have that bread. So I who the fuck am I disparaging? But people who are in, like you said, let's say for sake of conversation, a $50,000 a year job, and that's no disrespect to anybody who's making that. But then if you look at somebody who's like you said, in like a $10 million thing, and they're buying cars and they're buying houses, to your mentality is like, they about to go broke. They spending too much money.
Yes. Yes.
Where it's like, No, if you have $10, $12 million, buying a $200,000 Bentley is not going to crush your shit.
It's always perspective. Like people, you know, would talk about, you know, when Jordan, I think Jordan's son was getting something like, you know, $40,000 a month for some, you know,
some
ridiculous amount of number, right?
Yeah.
But like, when you put it in relation to what his pop's net worth is,
$900 million.
I'm like, dude, that's basically like your parents giving you like $100 a month.
Right? Exactly.
Like it's not impacting anyone's lifestyle
at all. You know, I kind of wanted to mention that. I just thought it was a very interesting.
Nobody's selling kidneys on the black market to send Riley to New York, my nigga.
Word. Yeah, ain't nobody selling no candy bars on the subway. she good.
No Showtime. No Showtime.
She good. She real good. Real quick. I know neither one of you watch it, but I really have to just mention Watchmen because the show is fucking phenomenal, man. It's up to episode 7 now, so there's only. Three more, I think it's 10, or there might be 9. I think there's only 2 more left. So I'm obviously not going to get into the show because you guys don't watch, but just the way the show is covering race and what I think a lot of people are almost missing, not only just race, but they really are also covering the, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the deviousness and the, I guess, I don't know if ambitiousness is the right word, of people in power, how far they'll go to keep that shit and squash anything else in the way. Because that's also what's happening on this show. It's not just the racism, but it's kind of like these people in power and what they, in this alternate world, what they'll do, which is even in one case is like killing 3 million people just like that to keep it. Like, it's just... The show is incredible, and like so much of the stuff that they do on race is you know is true stuff, but it's not kind of like the racism 101 things that you see, like that you expect to see, like oh the bus boycott or you know Dr. King and all that. I mean, they go on way deeper, but when they do shit, it's like based on truth, so it's kind of like really really heavy, man. I hope one day
I'm gonna catch up with it.
Yeah, the show is fucking incredible.
I don't have the bandwidth for it right now.
Yeah, no, I got you, but like it's fucking incredible. Like it's absolutely one of the best shows on TV by far. Let's mention Kamala Harris, excuse me.
Yes.
Because I hate when people say her name wrong. Kamala Harris dropped out of the presidential race yesterday. There have been rumors, I've been reading, there have been rumors for like a few weeks now that things weren't cool internally. Her money was drying up quickly. She ended up laying off a bunch of people in the campaign a while ago. There were issues with her sister being part of the campaign, and I guess it was some clashes between her sister and maybe the campaign manager, because Kamala and her sister, damn, a name I'm blanking on right now, are like super close.
Maya, I believe.
Maya, yeah, super duper close. So I'm sure that caused some issues at some point, because Kamala probably ended up, you know, listening to her sister over other people who felt that they were more experienced. And I'm actually sad to see her go. And I think I've said this on the show, or if I did, I'll say it now. I do think the one thing that her and Cory Booker, to a lesser extent, because I don't think he could pull it off anyway, but I just thought that I think that Kamala got, in my opinion, some bad advice right out the gate, because she, I felt like that she was kind of told by her campaign people to not be the quote unquote black candidate. So I feel like, let me finish now, because I see your fucking mouth twisting up. Hold on, let me finish. So what I'm saying about that is, I just felt like she should, and I saw that Roland Martin kind of said this on Sean's Boy. Roland Martin said, one of the few things I've ever agreed on him with, he said that when she decided, even before she declared, it would have been cool for her to kind of like dig into all the black women's groups, like the black MBAs and the NAJB and all that stuff. Because I just felt like that she kind of skimmed that, being this black woman from Berkeley, Oakland, California, went to Howard, pledged AKA, you know, and I felt like that they didn't kind of invest in that as much as they could have.
She went to Howard. She did organizations for the AKAs. She ski-weed at a motherfucking... She ski-weed when she made her announce. Like, she did all that. And every time she leaned into the black shit, the ADOs motherfuckers was like, she pandering. She got a picture of her.
Yeah, the ADOs people definitely fucked her up. The ADOs people fucked her up.
That's the problem. So from the very jump, black folks were like, she ain't one of us. She's only trying to be one of us now that she wants to be down.
She's a cop.
She's a fucking cop. So every time she leaned into the black shit, black people were like, we're not buying what you sell. Not all black people, obviously, but she had so many black people coming against her with the Kamala's a cop shit. I remember there was a clip from last year on, maybe it was Colbert, or it was
Bill Maher,
Trevor Noah's joint, where she did a spoof of a campaign ad, because it was around the time Black Panther came out. She did a spoof of a campaign ad where she did the Wakanda Forever sign.
Mm. And like, I vaguely remember this.
After she announced, somebody edited that shit and circulated it as though it was a real ad. Like, look at how hard she's pandering to us. Right here. So like, and that was just a spoof. Like, I went and found the whole clip and was like, come on, y'all. Like, give me a break. So she had that working against her. Then they were like, oh, she's married to a white man. But she did all of that. She was at Essence. She was doing stuff with the AKA. She was going back to Howard. She was having, because she was doing Breakfast Club. Like, she was doing the black outlet. She was doing that shit. And on a local level, she was visiting black organizations and talking to black people and black women. But she had black folks working against her as hard as other people. The other thing is that every candidate of color, their coverage is significant, like the disparity of coverage between
no question.
Everybody else is incredible. And they've been putting nails in Kamala's coffin for months now.
While they're letting these other motherfuckers who got less than her rock out.
Right. Meanwhile, Bloomberg done bought into the race. Some other millionaire done bought into the race.
Tom Steyer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Steyer. And now the same, and people have been talking about this all day today. Like, outlets who were, Let me tell you everything that's wrong with Kamala 2 weeks ago, and now
they fucking praising her.
It's so white. The now this field is so white. Oh, this is horrible. Oh, what happened with Kamala? It's just like, it was a self-fulfilling prophecy. But I think, Sean, you made a point yesterday that I think you should share about it being smarter for her to get out now.
Yeah, I think that this is probably the best move. There was a lot of misinformation regarding what was occurring. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it was pretty obvious that she was dealing with significant financial issues. But I thought that backing out of this now versus trying to run an unwinnable race would be, you know, more beneficial for her in the long run. I think if she goes out there and she, you know, keeps trying to win this thing and it's just a dismal failure, she might be in a situation where she can't really
recover.
Yes. And I feel like right now what she does here is a smart thing, right? She bows out gracefully, right? And mm-hmm. and what she does more importantly is she doesn't step on anybody. She doesn't, she falls on the sword, right? We're not gonna point fingers, we're not gonna name names. Okay, the campaign has some issues. And that is what it is. I'm gonna go back to being a senator. And
she's right on time for the impeachment.
Yes, hearing. And she's going to have her stage for another 4 years. I think that Kamala is suffering from, and I really thought about this the other day. Is like she's suffering from having been in government, whereas mm-hmm. Barack Obama really didn't have.
Yeah, because he was only a senator for like a couple years, right?
Yes, he did. So he didn't really have the track record for people to dredge up and for people to question and for people to go after in the same way that she did. He also had this incredible magnetic personality.
Yeah, you can't buy that.
She doesn't have that.
Yeah,
she's a great candidate. Right. But she just is not a magnetic candidate. She's not a magnetic personality.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what, you know, this is kind of.
Yeah, it's a popularity contest.
Yeah, it's a popularity contest. Right. So, I think that there are a lot of different things swirling about. I think that when you have yourself, I think to me, whenever you put a family member in a position of authority, that in and of itself is a conflict of interest.
Yeah,
it is inherently a conflict of interest because people are never going to know what side of the fence that person is on. And when they realize what side of the fence they're on, and if you're an objective person or not, it might be too late, right? Yeah. People need to be able to come to you with things. It sounded to me like, you know, she's out campaigning and this particular campaign manager isn't really explaining the dire financial straits that they were in, right? Like they were really, like they were fucked up. Like some of those people didn't even know that they were being laid off. Yeah, it costs a lot of money. And, you know, I didn't see a lot of fundraisers for her.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not a large donor, so I'm sure nobody was emailing me for my little $25.
But that's also because everybody kept saying that Kamala was taking, you know, corporate money and super PAC money and all of this. Like, there were just so many narratives.
The Russian bots were on her neck.
It wasn't even just the Russian bots.
It was some regular ass niggas.
Yeah, Dwayne and Darnell.
I saw a skit.
And Tyreek, what's his face? Isn't that his name?
Oh, with Tyreek who?
The hair colors nigga.
Oh, Nasheed. I saw a skit on I forget which show, one of the talk shows, and they interviewed. It was who's the show? I guess it was just Trevor Noah because it was a good man, Roy Wood, and he did a thing where he sat down with a bunch of black people and asked them about like who they were going to vote for and blah blah blah. He was holding up pictures, and he said like, he held up Kamala's picture and then. One nigga said, "Oh, she's the cops." So it's like that thing just kind of narrative just permeated all the way down to the roots,
which is really really sad, and it's really really dumb, and it's just an ass backwards. Like there's no sense of collective, right? No. Like there's no sense. These would have been the same niggas that would have got on the bus in Montgomery.
Oh, absolutely. I need to get to work.
I was talking about that like that. I gotta get to work. Y'all motherfuckers play too much.
And we've said on this show before, like
it's okay, you know, don't speak for me.
And yeah, we said on this show before, there's a lot of people's parents, grandparents, whatever, that wasn't rocking with Martin and Malcolm. Don't get it fucked up. It was not a unified front.
Yeah,
there was a lot of people like, they troublemakers, they fucking up shit. Now everybody looking backwards is like, oh, I marched. Nigga, you're lying.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be interesting what she does in this next 4 years. I don't know when her term is up, but I know that this impeachment is going to be, to me, this impeachment is the stage in which she really can maybe reignite her name in that. And absolutely. I think that, and I definitely feel like, I mean, listen, I think she's qualified. Absolutely. From what I've seen, her policies seem to be in line with what I think is appropriate for, mm-hmm. for my folk, for my interests, mm-hmm. for the people who I love interests. So, you know, and like you said, now what's really disheartening is that your one tweet, it was like the person was like, yeah, she's this and she's that, and, you know, listed a bunch of her flaws, but I'm like sad she's out or something, you know, and I'm paraphrasing.
What's your man said that? Mark Lamont Hill.
Yeah, and then it's like, yeah, that nigga can never say, look, and listen.
After Jill Stein, Mark Lamont Hill can't never say nothing.
Nothing, nigga, nothing.
But I was going to say that. If Obama was running, because some of these niggas just don't like, we talked about this before, some of these niggas just don't like anybody, right? They just want to live in, I don't know what the fuck it is, if it's socialism they want, some shit else other than the actual two-party system that we are facing right now. Mm-hmm. But if Obama was running today, these motherfucking hot
takes. Oh, they'd be cutting his neck. They'd be cutting his neck. Oh, my God.
It would be a whole different ballgame. Are you kidding me? It'd be
Cornell and Tavis all over again.
Yeah, but it'd be a whole bunch more of them.
A whole bunch more of them. Like, fuck this shut diving ass nigga. Like, it would have been horrible.
So, like I said, Sean said, we'll keep an eye on what Kamala does. And I'm sure in the impeachment hearing, she's going to set it off because she always does. I want to mention Queen and Slim. I actually went to see it today. Now I know you went to one of the premieres a couple weeks back. I got some issues. Do I get
it's
to go first?
It's not a perfect movie, but it's a fucking good ass movie.
All right, well, let me just say my piece now. Now I already give me a side. Y'all can't see it, but she eat a Cheeto giving me the side eye. Literally. So I didn't hate the movie now, so like not saying that. I thought the storyline, especially early on, was a bit, come on, bro, because like some of the things.
I feel like they addressed some of the holes in the plot.
Some of the things that they were doing, I was like, nigga, who does that? Like, what are you doing? Like, who does this, my nigga? Like, what are you talking about? But I don't want to call it an issue. Because let me change what I'm about to say. It's not an issue.
Criticism?
There was a criticism. Is, and it's not necessarily even a bad thing, but to me, it was kind of like Melina's Southern version, and stylistically, I mean, of Belly, in that you could tell that she was a, you know what I'm saying? You could see that she's a video director. So right. There was so many, it was like if you took the movie apart, it's like, it was almost like there was a whole bunch of different little videos
that she put together. She meant it to be a reverse Great Migration.
Yeah, going back to the South. Exactly. Yeah, I got you. But what I'm saying, it's like some of the way the scenes are set up and everything, it was like, again, there was a lot of shots are beautiful, they're gorgeous, but it felt like, almost like with Belly, it was like, I could tell Hype is a video director because because in a lot of cases in this movie, just like in Belly, I felt like a lot of times the style of the shot and the look of the shot was more important than the actual story. It was like, this shit just looks dope. So we're going to put this shit in there. But like, it don't really, what's happening here don't quite make sense, or it's not quite adding up, but the shit is beautiful. No, and look at these beautiful brown people.
Well, see, this is where I actually disagree, because I actually walked away with telling people that the story was stronger than I expected it to be when I went. Because the premise seemed a little too simple to me, right? Like, they shoot a cop at a traffic stop going wrong, they go on the run. I was like, all right, I got, like, how are we supposed to root for them? What is supposed to be happening? Like, I had so many questions, and some of them got answered as the characters were working this out.
Yeah, because I'm going to say the first 15 to 20 minutes, I actually thought about Sean, because I was like, I don't like neither one of these niggas. You know what I'm saying? Like, but either one of these niggas would catch an L, and I don't give a fuck. Right. But obviously, as the movie went on, and they started to literally reveal themselves, like, exactly. physically, as well as, you know, emotionally, then I started to connect with them more. But that first 20, 25 minutes, I was like, I don't like neither one of these people.
But what I liked was that there really was an arc there. There was an arc between them. There was the other, and the other thing I think about Queen and Slim, like, I was saying this to somebody else, you know, there's been a lot of criticism, again, niggas don't like nothing, about films with black trauma in them. And maybe because I'm a child of the 90s where every movie was about drive-bys and motherfucking
Menace of Society, Boys in the Hood.
It was a whole subgenre. Yeah. And before that, the last big black subgenre was the blaxploitation era where every movie was about pimps and niggas getting shot. I get it that we need different kind of stories. I completely understand that. But at the same time, everything ain't got to be a fucking take on the entire black experience. Like, let's just have a movie that has some suspense and some action. Like, I definitely had questions about a narrative where the heroes kill a cop. Right, and there was.
But then, when you see what happens and how it happened.
Right, and there were a couple of. There was like one other very big moment in the movie where I was like, "That doesn't sit well with me," because it's also kind of like left there. They never really deal with it.
Talking about the other cop scenario.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was like, "What was that about?"
Right. They.
I was actually going to bring that up. Like, wait, what?
Yeah, they never really deal with it. It doesn't serve a purpose.
Yeah.
Like I was, so that bothered me. Right?
And that character didn't seem. To have that in him.
Right. So it's like, so there are a couple of places in the movie that bother me, but I don't necessarily need a flawless, like,
I wasn't looking for flawless.
And I'm not saying this to you, Jeffrey. I just mean in general, in terms of people wanting the whole. Yeah.
It's okay for all our movies not to be, like there was one line that Slim said in the movie.
Like, why
black people? Why black people always gotta be excellent?
Yeah.
It's like why can't we just be us?
And also, like, places in the movie are fucking funny. The music is excellent.
The music is good.
Bokeem Woodbine is excellent.
Yeah.
Like, I was, like, his character made me so happy. I mean, it was kind of, and for him, it was kind of like a return. It was almost like a full circle moment from his Jason's Lyric character, like, coming back on the other side in a weird way. But, I mean, I walked away liking it a lot more. Like, I will watch that movie again.
I'll put it like this. I don't want to give the movie away because it hasn't been out that
but
long.
They're both irritating in the beginning, but they're irritating each other in the beginning.
I understand that. But there was just things that they did, not to each other, just in general. It was like, niggas wouldn't really, come on, bro. But like I said, but then as the movie kind of went on, it took a while for me. But then at a certain point, I'm going to say more than halfway through before I started to really, like, care about what actually happened with these characters. And maybe Melina did that on purpose. I'm not saying it wasn't purposeful for her to do that. Because, like you said, they were annoying the fuck out of each other because they had just met. They didn't even know each other. Literally.
Right. It
was a Tinder date.
Yeah.
It went going wrong. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't want to give the movie away, so I'm not going to talk in detail about anything happened because, again, it's only been out like a week. So I want people to go see it for sure. And I do hate the fucking Twitter niggas, or like you said, that they're just never satisfied and just going ham on the movie like it's, you know, the worst piece of shit they ever seen. It's like, yo, man, yeah, is the movie perfect? No, but like these are very talented people, whether it's, you know, with Lena, Melina, obviously Daniel. I don't know the woman who played the actress, the lead, played Queen. She was super dope too, you know, Bokeem, so on. So these are very talented people, but let them make this movie, even if it's not perfect, it's okay. Like let niggas live.
Well, you know, I mean, is it okay? Because she had mentioned in a tweet that, like,
you talking about Lena?
No, I'm talking about the woman who played the lead role. I'm sorry,
okay.
I'm blanking on her name.
Sophie Turner Smith.
Yeah,
what's her name?
Sophie Turner Smith.
Okay. Yeah, so she had tweeted about that it being like really tough or hard. It hurt. I'm sorry. She used the word hurt when, you know, black critics kind of panned the movie. And I'm like, you know, like what did, you know what I'm saying? Like if they panned it, it wasn't like it was said in a way that was like, you're wrong, right? Like, it was like, it just hurts that black people didn't, these black critics didn't like the movie, which I thought was just a very weird stance to take.
I mean, she's an actress, and it's her first major role.
Which is fine, like, because I don't think anyone, but my point is, I don't think anyone panned her performance.
Got it.
And like, I don't think anyone rationally
panned the movie.
That's what I was getting ready to say. I don't think anyone actually panned the movie. No one rational is my point. I mean, Jeff, you're going to have a Twitter nigga here and there.
Oh, it's one here and there. So it's like a little mini movement. A nigga.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
But whatever. Right, it doesn't. Whatever.
It's 40 niggas, right? Like, it's 40 niggas.
In real life,
yeah. Yeah, like it's 40 niggas.
It's 16 niggas tweeting over and over again.
Exactly. Right? So, but my point is like, for her to say that she was hurt gave me an indication that she was under the impression that these Black critics were not at an obligation to critique the movie. Like, that they were supposed to just take whatever this
Just show love.
Yeah. And I'm just like, yo, that's really not how any of this works.
Yeah.
And that's another issue. Like, we do not have to universally accept everything that's Black, because the other thing is that every story is not for everybody.
That's true. Right?
But on the flip side, we also don't have to come harder.
That's my issue.
But my thing is,
if you don't like it, don't like it. But you ain't got to like make it the worst piece of shit ever.
But that's the other thing. For the people that do like it, it's like you kind of get put in this sort of guilt trip phase if it's not really your bag. Like I've said long before, you had gone, you know, now had gone to see this in the premiere.
You weren't fucking with it.
It's just. It's not my wheelhouse. It's not a movie that I know what I like, and I know that I would not enjoy that. And you know, again, like I said, you know, peace to all of the people that worked on that movie, like not just, you know, the actors that are in front of
them. Yeah, the crew, like, and everybody.
I hope that there was as many people of color as we would like to think, particularly Black people, you know, working behind the credit, you know, working behind the scenes, getting their credits up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, listen, man, you know, films are going to, first of all, I saw somebody else complain too about saying how it was at only 1,700 theaters. Look, I'm no movie executive, but how this kind of normally works is that rated R movies, particularly movies where a cop is killed, is just not going to play in certain areas.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So rated R movies, like if you look at all of those movies that do, you know, between 2,500, 2,700, 3,000 screens, all of those are PG movies. Not PG, 13 movies.
Yeah, PG.
At worst, rated R movies very, very rarely get to 2,000 screens. Like you got to have a hell of a draw.
It's got to be like Halloween.
Yeah. It's got to be a hell of a draw for that to happen.
Like
that.
Yeah.
And to me, 1,700 screens is probably an appropriate number.
Yeah.
That number will probably drop off. I'm sure they'll probably do well in aftermarket and licensing, you know, with streaming services.
Absolutely. When it hit Netflix.
I'm glad it stayed small, because I'm amazed that white people aren't up in arms about this movie yet. They ain't seen it.
Yeah, well, I think
that's what I'm saying. Like, keep it low. Fuck. Like,
yeah, I mean, and you know, I do want to say, I don't think that, I think the other part of this is sort of the people that come to see these movies make it a little heavy, and they make it a little difficult for you to want to see it. Everything is the melanin, and you know the blackity,
oh my
black
God,
gravity,
look at
this
skin,
and it's a little draining for me, to be honest, because sometimes
I didn't say it was Black as fuck, but I said it's not Black like Melina doing Lemonade Black, like on some.
Yeah, and I get it, and I'm not a catfish
in the kitchen.
And God bless the people who are those people. I am not an artsy nigga. Like, I'm not. y'all niggas know me.
Where's the wings and the brown, goddammit?
Like, I am not, you know, if you want me to notice, like, the subtle way that the blue hits off their nose in this scene, like, nigga, that's something I'm not grasping.
Wrong nigga.
To me, this wasn't that. Like, there are some beautiful shots and it's beautifully lit.
Well, I'm not saying the movie.
Shit.
Yeah, I'm not saying the movie. I'm saying that the people that kind of go on these tirades, Yeah, like the people kind of go on these tirades. And again, that's a movie that I wish that, well, I didn't watch that movie. And it's got nothing to do with anything other than it's not my bag. I'm not interested in, you know, these painful challenges. And these, like, it's just not something I want to see.
Yeah, so, all right, cool. Oh, sidebar, before I forget, for the people, I'm sending a flyer, maybe today, maybe it's kind of late. So I'm officially doing my Christmas party again.
It's old nigga say he's sending a flyer.
You know, well, you know, I'm texting it. I ain't putting it in the mail. You know what
I'm saying? They got a street team in front of Red Rooster.
Going up in a barbershop. Hey, let me see this stack of these up here, man. Yeah. hey, brother, you might want to put a stack
more
of these.
More at the door. It's more at the door.
It's at the door now. You got fish, you got chicken, you know. So I'm doing my party December 22nd. Me and Goldfinger again. We're doing it at the Cove. So y'all come on out. And I took a little piece from you. So it's just gonna get to do your thing this year. So for those who don't know, Cove is a 2-floor kind of thing. So upstairs I'm gonna have games.
Okay.
So I'm gonna have a couple space tables, I'm gonna have Connect Four, I'm gonna have the Drunk Jenga, the Trivia Pursuit, Backgammon, Monopoly, all that shit. Yeah. So you know, for grown up fun. And then, you know, y'all come on downstairs after you get your fill and get bumped off that space table, and Goldfinger will be spinning down there for y'all to get your little drink and your two-step on. So I just want to mention that. I'll be putting that all up on the Instagram.
Oh, wait. Speaking of Goldfinger shit, well, yeah, your party. I just want to give a quick shout-out before we move on to Vion Cole for his Netflix.
Oh, yeah. I watched it last night. It was really good.
I have watched that bitch 6 times. I kid you fucking not. I made Mom and Eric watch it. It was just great for Thanksgiving.
I had no idea he was, I assume that he's just, I didn't know how they had no idea he was that good.
Me either. His timing.
Dion has been perfect. Like, you guys know I watch a lot of comedy specials. That's one of the reasons why I don't really like those heavy ass movies.
Yeah, so nigga, I'm gonna sit this brown and give me some laughs in.
Yeah, like Dion has really like I know people know him from Black-ish and they kind of seen him in Barbershop. Like this dude has been honing his craft for years.
You can tell.
Dion's probably started. He probably been doing this 20 years.
You can tell.
You can, and if you've watched him, you've seen the growth, like the hole where he takes the pad out.
Oh, yeah.
It's a genius thing that he does where he does these really dry humor jokes.
But that's also the greatest part, like his timing and his pacing. And I think all three of us are like, you know, we appreciate comedy as a technique and as a real like craft, not just ha-ha, it's funny. But his jokes are light, but like they're sneaky smart, right?
They're
smart in a way that you almost don't catch at first. And like you said, Sean, just the little pauses and moves he does. Eric was talking about like how he always like he up to something. How he'll like kind of make a little side eye, kind of be like, yeah, I'm about to get y'all on this one right here. But like all of it, every time I watch it, the entire first half, I'm still laughing out loud. Like the entire first half, I'm laughing.
One of the things he does that I think is missing from comedy, and I don't, you know, I'm being a stickler about this. I like when comedians don't laugh during their sets.
Yeah, like Chappelle has made that part of his thing where he laughs and slaps
the mic. Yeah.
Like, that's like, yeah, not really much. Lil Rel got a special out.
Yeah, bless his heart.
He is not that good, but he does the laughing thing a lot too.
Not that good.
Mike Epps does it. I tried to watch Mike Epps' most recent special after I watched John Cole the first time, and Mike is doing like the Chris Rock thing where he's pacing and laughing, and it's throwing me off because the nigga won't stand still. Like
Mike, he's
on coke. Like it's just too much going on.
That nigga is the quintessential barbershop comedian.
Yes. Absolutely,
he is. He is a barbecue legend. He is a barbershop legend, but as a stand-up, Mike has been.
I've been wondering how much is he even right now.
I'm gonna keep it a buck. I don't know Mike like that, but like I don't think he writes anything down. And
I don't either.
For the record, I think Mike is funny, but as a stand-up comedian, my nigga, I saw Mike in Rascals one night. Nigga, this was so long ago, I had an Averex jacket on, nigga.
Damn.
Nigga, I had an Averex on, nigga. And I was popping with it.
It was lit.
Nigga. So, but Mike's comedy has not grown. His style,
yeah.
Nothing has grown since that time because he's so used to sort of this slapstick, quick, spontaneous thing. So he doesn't really have the ability. At that particular night, Mike told the same joke twice.
Wow.
Yes. And it has definitely let him know you said that already.
Dude. You said that, nigga.
Because I do not believe that Mike, like one of the things Deion says, and it's the setup for some of his jokes, is that they've been on the road putting together the special.
Yeah, he said that,
I do not believe that Deion Cole spends 2 years on the road putting together his material. I believe he just, like, I'm out. Like, it's.
You mean Mike? You don't think Mike does that?
Huh?
You mean Mike?
I don't believe that Deion, Mike spends 2 years on the road.
No.
Putting together his material. Deion said he does. I think I don't believe Mike does.
No, I got you.
I believe that maybe there are jokes he's told before, but I don't believe that he goes back at the end of the set and changes order and changes pacing.
Yeah, flipping shit, moving shit. Mm-hmm.
And tweaks the word. You know, I don't believe he does any of that.
Yeah,
the only thing with Deion's part special I could have done without was, like, apparently all black comedians got to go on this PC rant. But at least he got through it quickly.
And he did.
Came out on the other side with another joke.
I feel like them niggas had a comedian. Them niggas had a meeting. Them niggas said, well, this is the talking point. Okay, and this is what we're going to stick to. And everybody that gets a special can't waver from this. Because it is the most consistent thing. I've never seen comedians more consistent with anything.
Ever.
Yeah, they're all saying
comedians
that.
Comedians who don't need to be. Like, you got nothing to do with you.
Yeah, like, Deion, we ain't even thinking about that with you. We just enjoying the show, bro.
Like, you on a family show. Nobody.
Yeah, exactly. You on two family shows because you're also on Grownish. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, which is coming back, I saw in January. Wanted to mention, let's keep it kind of like, well, Billy D. Williams.
Yeah,
so Mr. Billy D. Williams was on, it was an magazine was it?
He did an interview in GQ.
It was GQ Esquire, I couldn't remember which one.
I think it was Esquire.
But okay. So he does this interview, and in the interview, he says that, you know, I'm kind of paraphrasing, but he says that he when he talks about himself, he calls himself and herself, and he tells the writer this because he's, I'm paraphrasing. You know, basically, like, I'm in touch with my feminine side, and I like soft things too.
That's soft? No, he's like I consider myself to have a masculine side and a feminine side.
And a feminine side. Yes.
I'm in touch with the softer side of myself.
Yes.
Okay. And that was literally the entirety.
That's exactly what he said. And all of a sudden, I'm looking on the Twitter and I'm seeing him trending. You know, Billy 82. So I was like, wait a minute now.
Is he okay? The interviewer came back and was like, oh yeah, you know, what's the boy's name? Childish Don Glover.
Also
talked about being gender fluid. The interviewer introduced the phrase
gender fluid. Donald said that?
Apparently, Donald said something about playing around with gender fluidity and with being on the sexual spectrum or something. I don't know that quote.
I think
he was talking about
the Star Wars character. Yes, because Lando Calrissian is supposed to be pansexual.
So maybe it was that.
Yeah.
So, you know, when the interviewer...
Now, I'm not a boy now, so he could be... I don't know what he'd be doing.
I didn't find it hard to believe, but when the interviewer brings this up to Billy, he kind of like, oh, yeah, well, Donald said something about that. Billy's like, yeah, that boy is a genius. And so I'm reading this.
Me too.
I was clicking back from all these outlets that pick up the story that Billy D said he was...
Big outlets. Like People Magazine, like huge outlets.
And it wouldn't have surprised me. Gender fluid may have been surprising me. Sexually fluid would not have surprised me. You can't tell me anything about anybody who made it through the 70s and was famous in the 70s about anything they do, any way, any kind, anyhow, that's going to surprise me. But But I was clicking back to the original. So in the Out article, I saw the quote and I was like, wait a minute now, this is the actual quote. And then I went back to the original article and I was like, that's not what this nigga means. This nigga
at all.
He's sensitive.
That's all he means. All these outlets picked it up. I'm looking on Twitter. Like I said, Billy was trending. So I got nervous because Billy 82. And I'm like, wait a minute now. Is Billy okay? Billy okay. He's still here. He's good. He's still moving. And like you said, just like you did, I looked at, I read the thing. I looked back and read some other shit. And I'm like, and I'm seeing on YouTube, Billy D. Williams comes out as gender fluid. And I'm like, that's not what this nigga said. This old Harlem nigga said, I like to paint. He basically said, I like to paint. I like to wear robes. I like soft shit. I drink wine.
He was talking about why he was cool. He was like, because I'm in touch with my... And that's my thing. So what I said was, I was like, y'all, Billy D didn't mean, like, gender fluid.
At all.
Like, the way we understand gender fluid. And people are like, oh, but he said he uses different pronouns. I'm like, yeah, but you have to look at the entirety of his quote. Like, the quote, he didn't say anything about identity. He didn't say, he literally said he uses it because he's in touch with the softer side of himself. And he is an older man who believes that certain emotions and personality characteristics are attributed to certain sexes. So,
and also, yeah, you just got to look at the nigga. He's an 82-year-old man from... He's not even thinking all this shit. This is all newfangled shit. He's not thinking like that.
So people are like, oh, not even a lot of people. Most, I will say this, most people were like, you're right, I thought the same thing. Some people, a few people, a couple people, were like, that's not your place to say, and it's not. I was like, no, I'm not saying what he is or what he isn't. I'm telling you that the quote, people are putting too much
on
what he actually did say. We cannot turn something that's into a coming out story because we want it to be a, because we want to hold him up as an example. Like,
that was my issue. I didn't like that they were trying to make this man
not that would happen.
Put a move. Yeah, I don't care if he wasn't in the fluid, that's his business. But I'm saying, he didn't say that, and I didn't like the fact that they were trying to make this man like an icon for this movement he don't even know what the hell you're talking about. He's like, what?
Yeah, so Kelly Carter, who is a black reporter from Detroit, who used to write for Detroit Free Press and now writes for Undefeated, interviewed Billy D, bless her heart, the other day and said that Billy said, the very first thing I did was call somebody and say, what is gender fluid? And he said, that's not what I was talking about. Talking about being in touch with the feminine side of yourself. And my point is just like, niggas don't never read the original interviews on these things. Everybody jumped out the window. Everybody. And that is just as irresponsible as, you know, it's also an irresponsible form of reporting. Like, you cannot attribute labels to people who did not actually give those labels to themselves.
And again, I just didn't like that.
Fucking Billy D really cares or is offended because he's fucking Billy D. Williams. Who cares? But still, I just didn't like that.
Like I said, you know, maybe I sound like a conspiracy theorist or whatever, but I didn't like the how, like, this, you know, some of these people or powers that be or whatever you want to categorize them took this and ran with it because it was going to be good for their movement. It's like, that's not what he said. Go ahead, bro.
Listen, I'm just going to say, he mentioned with the Kelly interview that he was misinterpreted.
Right.
Which is actually incorrect. He misspoke. He wasn't misinterpreted.
Right.
They took what he said and they ran with it.
Exactly.
And that is a normal thing, right, for any publication when they hear someone say those words. The reason I think they did that was because even though Billy D is 82,
he's Billy D.
He's still also very, like, he's not a guy you know what I'm saying? Like, he's clear in what he's saying. If you read the words that he's saying, right, he's saying, you know, using himself, herself, things like that. So it was a little murky. And I think people kind of, you know, ran with it because, again, you have this sort of icon of masculinity. He's going to move the needle. He's going to be incredible clickbait, right? For you to run with your story. I mean, listen, he's come out. He said that he was, you know, he was misinterpreted. He misspoke, and that's fine too. But I don't think it's. I just feel like either way is not necessarily, when I say either way, interpreting what he said either way can be dangerous.
Right.
Interpreting, because ultimately the only thing we have are the words, right? Like right. That's really what it was. The author in the initial piece doesn't really give context. If the author says, you know, he said this while looking confused.
Right. But to me, the context was that after he said, because this is the first quote was, I feel like I try to be a character who doesn't take himself or herself too seriously. And then later he said, notice I said himself or herself because I have a masculine side and a feminine side. I'm also in touch with the softer blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Like, so to me, that was the clarifying statement as to what he meant by him.
As soon as you said himself and herself, niggas is women.
Then said, I'm in touch with the softer side of my emotions or whatever the fuck he said. To me, that was a clarifying statement. Yeah. But the author also used his segue into the conversation about the author and people who picked up the story used the segue into a conversation about whatever Donald Glover said about gender fluidity to put their own context on.
They used the pansexual connotation. Right. To that, which was based on a character and not what he said, and it sort of mixed the two. So there was a little conflation right. going on with what they were probably, I guess we can probably say now, it's fair to say that they were both talking in about two different things.
About two different things, exactly.
Yes, and I mean, listen, it kind of is what it is. I was indifferent because it's of no consequence to me. Like, I'm still going to watch Bingo Long and the Traveling All-Stars and Motor Kings, nigga.
Yeah, and they sing the blues.
Yeah, cool. Like, none of that's going to change.
My problem was just, like, it was, like Jeff said, it was such a big story. And people were, literally, Billy Dee comes out as gender fluid. Billy Dee talks about being gender fluid. Billy Dee says he's gender fluid. It wasn't Billy Dee addresses having a masculine and feminine side, you know, and I know that headlines are meant to be, you know, clickable, but also I know that niggas don't read, you know what I mean? So there are people who thought he said the words out of his mouth.
Yeah.
I'm gender fluid.
Well, and because again, that was coming from a few trusted sources. That was coming.
That was my problem.
Yeah. You know but that's where we are now. You don't gotta be right. You gotta be first.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah, so let's end this with we did discuss T.I. Previously, but since then.
This is Red Table Talk.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. We discussed the issue, the incident, with his daughter. But since that discussion, which I guess a couple weeks ago, he's done a Red Table Talk with Jada, her mom, and just Jada and her mom, and Tiny and him. Like, Willow wasn't there.
And Tiny.
Yeah, him, Tiny, Jada, and the mom. So it was the four of them. And it was, I also say revealing, but I guess maybe not revealing to some of us who kind of, you know or have heard about the dynamic of their relationship, but for the sake of conversation, revealing in that they talked about his daughter some, but the interview then really morphed into more of his, as usual, to a T.I., with his views on,
Marriage, patriarchy,
and
claim he didn't know what patriarchy was. Think if you don't get the fuck.
Yeah, and basically what he thinks a man and a man's role is as a father and as a husband, and with Tiny sitting there looking at times extremely uncomfortable, and wanting to say a lot and kind of holding back in a lot of cases and biting her tongue and not and then Jada not calling him to the carpet on a lot of things.
Yeah,
like
she
a lot
was really very both sides.
Yeah, she was like, yeah, sides. Like, nigga, Jaden, I got fucks with the nigga, like, he's a great artist, but this nigga's not making a lot of sense right now, and you're not calling him on it.
Well, maybe she wants to keep, because we talked about this before, that the Red Table Talk is supposed to be a place where you can safely be vulnerable and safely talk candidly
and not kind of be criticized
and not like have somebody come at your neck, right? It's not the view. So I guess she was trying to maintain that space. You could tell Miss Adrian,
she was biting her tongue like a motherfucker,
keep her mouth shut because she was ready to kick that nigga in his throat.
Yeah, she was looking at that nigga like, nigga, you sound dumb.
And you could tell that Tiny was like, fuck this Nigga, fuck. Because Tiny didn't even want to talk at points. Like, literally, Jada was having to be like, okay, Tiny, let me know if I got you. Because I think I think that Jada was also trying to keep Tiny from flipping out.
And all that, and also Tiny think that
NTI was holding a lot.
Yeah. And I think Tiny was looking at them a lot of times, like, see what I deal with?
Right.
It was a lot of that. Yeah, this type of shit this nigga be saying to me all the time.
Yeah, I think some of it was her trying to pacify Tiny to be like, all right, let me try to get this for you. Like, on some shit, like, because with a nigga like Tip, you can tell that Tiny says something and she'll be like, well, my friend said or whatever. T.I. be like, fuck your friends. Your friends ain't got no man. Your friends don't want you to be happy. You know what I'm saying? Like, blah, 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 blah. You can see how controlling he was in that room.
Mm-hmm.
So I can
so imagine.
But he respects Jada.
Yes.
Not only does he respect Jada, he also respects Will. So he
absolutely.
He's not going to completely dismiss what Jada said. So I think Jada was also trying to like help Tiny out. Because a couple times she literally like, she did the kind of put your arm out thing that you do when you want a person to hold up from talking. So she would kind of put her arm out to Tiny, be like, okay, Tiny, let me try this. You tell me if I'm right in what I'm saying. And she would be like, okay, T.I., so I think how Tiny feels is...
Like, let me interpret for her.
But it was a little too... There was a little too much coddling and a little too little challenging for me.
Very little challenging.
He definitely did not come out of it looking good. He came out of it looking even more small-minded to me. Because all you're doing is confirming... Like, he said some shit like, well, if a man can't provide for his family, then he's wrong or he's doing bad or whatever. But if a man does everything for his family, he's controlling. And it's like, no, nigga, that's not what that means. You know what I mean?
So yeah, that's not what that means at all.
Not even. It was some it was Twitter logic.
But he comes from that space, and I don't know if I mentioned it on the show, but I had a real issue. It was a few weeks, maybe 3 weeks or so ago, there was a clip that was floating around online of a guy, looked to be probably in his mid-50s, and looked like it was a family gathering, and he said, again, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, my wife has never paid a bill in her life. Like, she's never had to pay a car note, she's never had to pay insurance, she's never had to do anything. That's all been on me. And if you're not that type of man, then you're not a good man, you're not taking care of your responsibilities as a man, and that's, you know, you basically you're slacking. And my response to that, and some women were like, oh, that's right, I need a man like that. No. And my response to that was, when the same thing goes with T.I., I was like, this dude, this is all ego and control. Because he knows if I don't give you access to real money and I don't give you and let you know how. Let me run it back even further, because this also goes to T.I. to Tiny even more than the woman who sadly was in his wife. I said, there's no way, because this is human. There's no way you're going to tell me at some point in his wife's life, I don't know when, 18, 19, 20, 21, she had a vision of doing something. And he shut it down. Like, nope, we're getting married. You're not going to work. I'm going to pay all these bills. You're going to stay home and take care of these kids.
Yeah,
and
take care of everything. What do you need to do XYZ for? What do you need to go such and such place for? Like, I handle everything. What do you need?
Exactly.
I got you.
And if I want to dip and dive, I can dip and dive, because you'll never leave the house anyway because you're saddled down with children. Now, to lead that into Tiny's thing, which is even kind of iller, is, you know, for those who don't know, Tiny obviously was in the group Escape. And then after Escape kind of disbanded, her and Candy, I think they're still really close, but at one point they were like besties.
Yeah, they're still
really close, yeah. You know, but at one point they were besties. They're still
out of group.
Yeah, close out of group. But I'm sure they, And they still live in Atlanta, so I'm sure they see each other and talk and stuff. They both have just families now, so they can't hang out like they used to. But anyway, at one point they were besties and they started writing records together. And the first two of the early records that they put out as a duo, writing-wise, with No Scrubs, which I think did like that album did Diamond, and that was incredible. And then they did Bills, Bills, Bills by Destiny's Child, which also was a monster. So they were like on their way to being this real serious musically writing duo. And that was right around the time that T.I. and Tiny got together. And T.I., you know, whatever happened, Tiny stopped writing. Candy kept going. And Tiny stopped, and she brought that up in the Red Table Talk. Like, yeah, I stopped singing. I stopped doing my music stuff. Like, you know, I was on my way. Like, I had wrote two monster records, and you just shut it down. And it kind of did the same thing as that older guy did. She started having children.
Right.
You know, Tip's career took off. God bless him. You know, he's a great artist. And she's left at home with the kids right. while he's cruising the world doing his thing. And
soon she was about to launch a reboot. She got pregnant again.
Got pregnant again, shut that down. Then he shut down the TV shows. Remember, she had the show with her friend.
Shekinah, yeah.
And didn't her and Candy have a show at one point too early?
No.
Okay, with Shekinah. And that was and then he shut that down and said, no, if you're going to do a show, you're going to do it with me.
Right.
Oh, no, she had the show with Toya. That was the other one.
Okay.
Yeah, so I know she had two shows. And then he said he shut that down. So he's always kind of done things to stop her from ever having anything on her own.
Right.
And, you know, you got a lot of that in this conversation that he, like you said, is ultra controlling and will not allow her to ever do anything, kind of like leave his sight kind of thing, you know.
Right.
Bro, did you watch any of this?
I did. I watched.
What'd you think about it?
Let me just say.
Can you talk about it?
I can't.
Yeah, if you can't talk about it.
I would have preferred that they put this particular part 2 out a little further down the line. Mm. I hated the fact that all of this has swallowed up the real issue that came up, which was about the daughter, right? Like, it's almost like she's become collateral damage, and she's a side issue.
It's a side story now.
Side story, right? And so I hate that. But yeah, I mean, I listened to it. I watched it. I think that, like I said before, in terms of even with his parenting skills, he has a very clear way about going about things. I don't think he has ever wavered, and I don't think he has ever changed.
No.
And I think it's unfair to ask people to do so. I think if you're telling me you switched up the game 10, 12 years in, like in his mind, I'm not even saying he's right. I'm not saying he's right. In his mind, she's the one that's changed.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like
he's like, this is what we was doing all these years.
We've been doing this.
Well, fam, not to hold your point. He said that.
Yes. Yes, you understand what I'm saying? It would be no different than a woman that says, "Hey, I want to marry a man and be taken care of in this capacity, right?" And then you doing that, and then 12 years in, dude is like, "Nah, this ain't working for me. You need to go and do X, Y, Z." And you like, "Hold up, nigga! Like, this is what we discussed. This is what we've been doing. I didn't make any changes here." Right. So my issue is that, you know, if you he's been consistent, his behavior has been consistent.
It's who this nigga is.
It's his expectations, his behavior, and what he has delivered on has been consistent. He's confused as to why you're changing.
And but you know what? Hold your point. He said something that I think a lot of people, I don't think they missed it, but they didn't dig into it, which is, he feels like she changed, which is probably why he's putting the hammer down even harder now. She changed when he got locked up.
Right.
Because in his mind, he's like, you got freedom. When I got locked up, you had freedom.
He
said, maybe because I locked up that you decided to look at things different because you got your little, you know, taste without me. He said that. So he looks at it like, I went away and you were able to buck all the rules because I wasn't here.
I think that kind of plays a part in it too. But I also think that because he is a traditional man.
Old Southern black man.
And they had a very traditional marriage. Right. Mm-hmm. Like she was out of place and out of turn with being the head of the household. And he wanted to recapture that.
And even though it was his fault,
right? Like it was a problem that you were making these decisions and I need you to get back in line and we need to be as one. And for me, as one means what I say and you listen.
Right.
right? As one don't mean you got an opinion. As one means when I lay down this motherfucking law, you follow suit. And I think that, and I've said this all the time, man. Like, when people are consistent in who they are, it's your issue when you're expecting things from them, right? If you got a cousin and this nigga steals every time he's at your house, right? Every time he's at your house, something come up missing. You love him. You don't want to see him fucked up, so you invite him over again. Okay, nigga. Now, if you left your watch out and your checkbook out again, I mean, what
that's
we
on
doing
you.
Here? What we doing? Like, at this point, he kind of got to feel like this is a gift. Like, if you don't know by now, nigga, I'm a thief. I mean, I thought you left this for me.
No, it's true. After a certain
Charlene, where my Gucci belt?
Yeah. After a certain point, you can't be mad at people for being who they've already shown you they will be.
And then he says, I don't want to start over. That's, to me, just as a man in a marriage, that is not enough for me to sustain the rest of my life. I don't want to start over. It's not enough to fill me for the rest of my life. Because guess what, man? No. Like, we think we owe because we lived. Yeah, like, we think we owe because we've lived. Our kids are aging now. They're getting older. They're getting grown. But, like, yo, like, these niggas ain't—they're not even 50, bro. Like, you know how much life you have after. Yo, motherfuckers is gonna be like, dude, like, the person that's probably gonna hit $120, $130 is alive right now.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not uncommon for people to live, you know, vibrant lives into the 80s. Like, you want to spend the next 40 fucking years of your life just because you ain't want to, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, Tip's barely 40. I think he might be like 40, 41. 40,
that's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, so right? that caught me too. When he said that, I'm like, okay, this.
But here's what else he said. That's the kicker. I'm stuck in my ways and I don't want to change. And what I think he realizes is that while I might be able to go and do have fun a little bit here, a little bit there, okay, I don't have anybody that's going to fall in line at home in the way that I need them to fall in line at home and hold this family together if I got to go off and run around the world for, and I'm not saying, you know, go off and run off with some other one. I'm saying, you know, it would not be uncommon if he has to go shoot a movie for 2 months.
In Prague
or something, right? Yeah, like, whatever. Yeah. Like, I need to know that this crib is going to run smooth. And when I come back, shit gonna go back to
right,
the way
right
I
back
need
into,
it to be.
Right back into right? it. Yeah.
I come off that plane, my cabbage and my yams is the way I like it.
You know, I like my hot sauce on the side. You know what I'm saying? But again, I think that's what happened when he got locked up. He came home and things didn't immediately go right back into it. And he was like, wait, what the hell is this? You know you're supposed to
do this and talking.
Right. You back talking. You know what I'm saying? And all of a sudden, it's like late night text from Floyd Mayweather. And he's like, what the hell is going on? Oh, you don't got you done grown out your britches since I've been gone.
Nigga was in the juke joint like when Mr. told beat him.
You need to beat him. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, it was just very interesting to see, like, this for what it's worth, I mean, like Sean said, he is who he is, and he doesn't waver from that. So, and you have to kind of respect that he doesn't waver. But
I don't have to respect it. I can acknowledge
maybe it's respect. Maybe respect is wrong.
But that's the problem, though. People don't even want to acknowledge. They want to tell you, yo, you need to change. And the question is, he's got 20 years worth of history to tell him that he don't need to change.
Exactly.
But I do have an issue with his complete unwillingness to change. But I acknowledge that he is who he is. But the fact that he is who he is why I'm also like, stop letting this nigga speak for black. I mean, I know he does speak for a certain kind of black man. But get this nigga off the black intelligence.
But yes.
Status. Like,
I think... I also want to say, too, I think that while I like Jada, and Jada has a lot of credit, you know, and a lot of cachet in the community, and folks will never step out of turn with her, She's got a 30-year history of sort of being that person. Mm-hmm. I think I definitely feel like there's a little bit of a disservice when she has no pushback. Yeah, and by pushback, I think we often, and I said this about the issue that I had kind of with President Obama, in that there's always this, like, it's almost like the idea of even confronting something that could be wrong or hypocritical is seen as an attack. And so we back away from it because we don't want to seem like we're attacking people. Mm. And I think that we've kind of got to get away from that, right? And so I thought about Ayanla a lot. Not a lot, but like I thought about Ayanla and how very different.
Yeah, Ayanla's going right at you. Oh my God, this would have been amazing on Ayanla. This would have been amazing.
Except Ayanla would have pulled T.I. to her bosom and fucking cradled his ass.
And had Tiny yelling into the dirt.
I'm not saying Tiny yelling into some grass
out in the backyard.
I'm not saying she's perfect at all.
No.
What I'm saying is how she confronts. Yes, right. How she confronts issues, even if it wasn't to him, even if she just pulled Tiny to the side and said, yeah, like nigga, you fostered this.
Yeah,
you were a part of this.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not putting words in her mouth. I'm just saying.
She would have said, "Yo, you need to own up to your part in this."
And I think that with Red Table Talk, I think the premise and the vibe, and I think also because I think this is shot in their home.
Yeah, it is.
I think that, yes, and so I know people like that. I'm one of those people, like. It doesn't matter that this is a TV show. You're in my home. You're in a space that I'm allowing you. You're a guest in my home.
I want to make you be comfortable.
I'm not going to make you uncomfortable. I'm never going to do that. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You know, once you walk into my doors, you're a guest here and I got to treat you as such.
Well, yes. That. And the other difference is Red Table Talk is meant to be, Red Table talking about Yala, and I know, Sean, you weren't trying to make it a direct comparison, but they are meant to serve different purposes. Like, for one, Jada is not a counselor or a therapist, and Ayanla is. And secondly, she's a counselor, at least. I don't know that she's a licensed therapist, but she at least does have counseling training. And secondly, Red Table Talk is supposed to be a place for open dialogue, whereas Ayanla is supposed to be a place for, like you said, confrontation and solution. So there is...
That's a fair point. That's a fair point.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because Red Table Talk never professes that they're going to solve something. It's more like, let's have an honest conversation.
This is obviously a real dialogue about it.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to wrap it up on that note. Happy holidays to everybody. We'll probably do
Midtown Manhattan. The tree is officially lit.
Yeah, exactly. We lit up. They did the lighting tonight, so it's popping everywhere.
Shit's crazy over there.
Crazy. We'll probably do maybe two more shows before the year's out. And that's it. And I'll be giving you all my information about my old nigga party. So that's it. We'll wrap up. We'll see y'all next week.
Peace.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.